Welcome to Season 5 of the Willing Equine Podcast, the podcast all about creating positive relationships between horses and people. I'm your host, Adele Shaw, a certified equine behavior consultant, horsemanship mentor, and all-around horse lover. Okay, we're back with more things that can't be trained with positive reinforcement, according to y'all's comments on social media, whether that was Facebook or Instagram. You guys commented different things that you thought couldn't be trained with positive reinforcement, either maybe something that you had heard couldn't be done with positive reinforcement, or maybe you've tried it and weren't very successful, or maybe you can't visualize how it would be possible, and so you're questioning that. And so the comment was more a question is this possible, is it not, kind of thing. So we've already done a few installments in this series. This is going to be the last one. So I'm wrapping up kind of some miscellaneous comments that didn't necessarily fit into a grouping like on the previous episodes. The first thing we're going to cover is proprioception exercises. So self-awareness, meaning awareness of the body and movement, being aware of your place in space, how your body moves, you know, the edges of your body, meaning everything that's going on, whether it's the awareness of the feet, the hands, when it's come to people, or for horses, maybe it's the awareness of where their hooves are versus their tail versus their shoulder versus their head and muzzle. It's their spatial awareness. It's their ability to feel and be in kind of connected with their body and how they move throughout their life and how they interact with the space around them and their awareness of that. So it's thought that this can't be trained with positive reinforcement. That was the comment that I received. And my experience is that this is actually possible, that training proprioception is possible with positive reinforcement. Really what it comes down to is making sure that we have a solid foundation with positive reinforcement, meaning we have good training mechanics, we have good shaping skills, we have a good understanding of what we're doing, we've got good feeding technique, the horse isn't dealing with underlying food anxiety, we are just in a really good place, we've got good food feelings, we've got a good established foundation. And then we start to apply this in our interactions that are focused on proprioception. So like for my horses, I will often set up a large variety of different objects and things that they can go over and interact with that help bring awareness to the body. So something that I might use is like an ACE bandage or like a stretchy tape kind of bandage that has very, very mild resistance that I place around their body. I put it usually in like a figure eight pattern, but you can learn more. There's different patterns you can do to help bring some tactile sensation to different parts of their body. And they can have this on them while you're doing something like reverse round pen or just leading even. And having this object on them can help stimulate the senses, the nerves in different areas of their body, which then can send that information to the brain, which then helps build the proprioception. There's a lot of different types of body wraps that we can do to bring awareness to the body. There's some you can put around the girth area or like the lower back area, across the chest, underneath the neck, around the head. Like there's a lot of different ways that we could apply this. Something else I might do is if I'm having a horse that's struggling with the backup and I feel that they are lacking some awareness of their hind end, is I'll temporarily place some bell boots on their back feet. And as I'm working with positive reinforcement, when I'm working with positive reinforcement on the backup or just leading, just that initial interaction with the bell boot, that sensory input that is given to the horse, it's not aversive. It's not something that's causing them fear or anything, but it just brings awareness to that foot. And I'll notice that there's an increase of awareness of that foot and the backup improves. They'll start to do diagonal pairs. They're actually lifting the back legs instead of dragging the toes. But I always make sure and introduce these objects in a very slow, very systematic way where the horse is not fearful of the object and they're not trying to avoid it. We're not creating sensory input in combination with fear and avoidance. We just want some tactile information that's almost happening at a subconscious level while we're doing something that the horse enjoys and has a good time doing and it has something that they understand well. So that goes back to the bell boots. I might initially introduce them to like a soft something that's around the back leg, or if the horse is comfortable with having their feet handled, just kind of feeling up and down their legs and making sure we're all good, and then put the bell boot on and just kind of mess with it a little bit. And this whole time they're getting, you know, clicked and fed or just fed. And then we'll work up to being able to have some movement with it on. So exercises like that are really beneficial for building proprioception. And then we can do this during our positive reinforcement training sessions. It's no different than training with negative reinforcement. If you have a horse that you're teaching to back up and is dragging their back feet, and you're teaching them with negative reinforcement, and then you prepare them and get them used to and desensitized to the bell boots, and then a little bit, not enough that they ignore them completely, but enough that they're not fearful of them. And then you put those bell boots on to help increase awareness of those hind feet. You're going to get some awareness, a subconscious kind of awareness of their back feet, or maybe it's conscious, and meaning that they're more cognitively aware at the time of what's going on, versus it's just kind of this thing that's happening unintentionally. So then you would continue with your negative reinforcement training. You put a little pressure, they do their backup step, you release pressure, right? Same thing is happening here. So we can absolutely incorporate proprioception type focus training into working with positive reinforcement. I can't literally click and shape proprioception. I can't. Well, actually, I take that back, because I kind of can. What we can do is actually, I'm going to use an example. One of my horses I taught to do like a crunch, we were moving into like a school halt, and I did it through a very, very, very fine-tuned micro shaping approach, meaning that I was looking for tiny, tiny little muscle twitches that were making progress towards being able to do the school halt. So we started from just completely standing still, just hanging out, just eating. And then I started clicking for little tiny shifts in the chest and the pectoral muscles and all that. And then in the hind legs, and then them starting to, you know, lift the core and sitting on the hind end. And we shaped it from almost nothing to now we've got this really nice, beautiful behavior. And those types of that type of process, that shaping process, can actually help improve a horse's awareness of their body and help improve their control over different aspects of their body and their proprioception, their awareness of themselves and the different muscles and how they can use them and how in control of them they are and what is being, because we're attaching the brain, we're attaching intentional movement or intentional effort to different aspects of the body and the body's movement that may be happening without the horse's full awareness of what's going on. It's kind of an autopilot behavior that they're doing. So I do believe that clicker training can absolutely help increase your horse's self-awareness, their awareness of their body and the proprioception. And then also we can incorporate, just like we would with traditional negative reinforcement, pressure and release type training, we can incorporate different proprioception type exercises into the training, like the body wraps and the sure foot, you know, balance kind of pads, and even balance mats like I use tumble mats that are for people, but I actually use them for my horses, and they're great because there's just a little bit of a lack of stability in the mat, enough to make the horse kind of think about their balance and get them thinking about it and shifting their balance so that they can stabilize, and they're using muscles and fine twitch muscles to get themselves balanced, and that can help build proprioception as well. We can use, you know, bell boots, things like that, that can help really build awareness of the body. Even blankets, I've used different lightweight, like mesh sheets and such, to help bring a horse's awareness to their size. Even like I've had a horse where I was convinced that, and actually I was proven right, where she didn't really want to go into the horse trailer because I think she thought she was too big for the trailer. Like she couldn't possibly fit in there. And so I put on a lightweight sheet on her because it was summer. I just put on like a mesh, you know, cooling sheet kind of thing on her. And all of a sudden she could walk in. And it was because she needed something to show her own body's size in comparison to what she was looking at. And now that's it's kind of hypothetical. I don't know exactly if that's what was happening, but that's my interpretation of what happened, and it worked. And this horse had already been introduced to the blanket, was comfortable with the blanket, it was not new, it was not aversive, it didn't add pressure to the situation or aversives or anything like that. but it did help bring awareness to her body so that she could feel more comfortable in the environment I was asking her to get into. So I do absolutely believe you can, and I practice this on the regular, bring proprioception type exercises into all training, but also positive reinforcement. And also I think clicker training and positive reinforcement can help a horse become more aware of their body. I'll give you one more example, hoof care. So when I have a horse that's really struggling for hoof care and they just seem to be off balance, they have a hard time figuring out which foot to pick up, they're just really struggling and they're fearful even with their hoof care handling. When I go in clicker training, when I do it with cooperative care and I teach them to pick up their own foot and give me their foot and hold their own foot, all of that, I find that all of a sudden the horses are much more comfortable. I believe a large part of this is because the horse becomes more aware of their own body and they're in control of what's happening, and it can improve their hoof handling in general, not just when you're trying to clean the feet or trim it, but I find that they're actually more, they're more sure-footed and they're more present, like they're more aware of their feet and they pay attention more to their feet and they're like, oh, this foot, I can control picking it up and I can hold it for you. And it just brings a lot of awareness to what they are doing and what's gaining the reinforcer. So I do believe clicker training itself can improve proprioception and, you know, awareness of the body. Which leads us into a comment about movement science and how positive reinforcement as it's used right now may be limited in its ability to be compatible with movement science. So the comment, I'll actually read the comment. Most protocols for R+, in my opinion, or negative reinforcement, so R negative, pressure and release, are not compatible with science movement skill acquisition because microshaping and thin slicing / incremental successive approximations conflict with motor learning research in many areas. But I 100% still use positive reinforcement for movement training. It just looks different. And it's not even close to the protocols I would use for training specific behaviors needed for virtually any non-movement training behaviors. So I don't have a solid answer for this as far as is positive reinforcement compatible or not with the updated research on movement science. I believe there is so much more to life than just, you know, operant conditioning. I don't want to put us into a box. It's just R plus or it's just negative reinforcement and there's nothing else going on. However, I still believe that is always happening. It is always occurring and we can't just step outside of it and like, okay, this exercise we're doing movement science and this exercise we're doing positive reinforcement. That's, or negative reinforcement, or I should say really, this exercise we're doing movement science, this exercise we're using operant conditioning. That's not how it works. Operant conditioning is still always happening. However, my understanding and what I believe is that when in this comment, I absolutely would imagine is going along the lines of this, when we're micro shaping behavior, like that example I gave you of my horse that I was teaching the school halt to, it's in conflict with some of the updated movement science where the learner needs to be in charge. The brain needs to be in charge of exploring that range of motion and it needs freedom to go and discover that it can do this thing. If there is external pressure or motivation of some kind to and shaping that and it needs to be exactly like this and adjust in this way and repeat the drilling of it, that is in conflict with the science. And I understand that and completely can agree. So the way that I'll just tell you what I do that helps me apply the science, the updated movement science, and also continue to use positive reinforcement in a way that doesn't frustrate my horses or cause any food anxiety or cause lots of extinction bursts and things like that. We don't want to cause frustration and we don't want to withhold reinforcers. But we also do want our horses to be exploring the range of motion. We want them to be exploring movement. We want them to get out there and move and variable movement patterns and just expanding their range of motion in different areas. We don't want to drill and create these problems that we see in our equine society today, where we've got so many sports injuries for these horses. We've so many injuries. These horses that are at the top of the game are sustaining injury after injury, And these are all highly preventable injuries. And most of them are coming from, I don't know about most of them, but a lot of them are coming from drilling and drilling and drilling into repetitive motion. We're just wearing and tearing on their joints, on their ligaments and tendons. We're just tearing them apart because we were just drilling, drilling, drilling. And we were putting excessive wear on the same areas over and over and over again. And we're causing problems. So for me, what this looks like is changing my horse's day-to-day life and impacting that from an antecedent perspective, the rest of my horse's 24-hour day. So if I do, and let's say I do an hour training with my horse per day, which is, I don't usually get an hour per horse per day, but let's just say I have an hour per day per horse. The rest of the 24-hour day, so 23 hours out of the day, I want my horses exploring a wide range of movements. I want them going up and down hills on their own. I want them trotting around with their friends. I want them bucking and playing. I want them getting forage from up high, getting forage from down low. I want them, you know, kind of trying to figure out a puzzle of how to get this little piece of grass from under this log kind of thing. I want them going over ground poles. I want them going over logs. I want them picking their way through rocks and rocky terrain. I want them going over soft soil and hard soil. I want them going over rocks and soft ground. I want them going over grass and through water. I want all these things, and I want them exploring it at high speeds, low speeds. I want them doing all of it. It should look like anything but the manicured pasture, you know, square or circle that's monoculture grass and flat ground and perfect, no holes, no nothing. Like, everything is beautiful and you can't possibly hurt yourself out there. I want the opposite of that. Now, of course, I need to prepare my horses for that. It happens gradually over time. I can't take a horse that's only used to that type of environment, throw them out in the pastures I've got now. But I guarantee you, most of the people, if you guys saw what my pastures look like right now, you'd be a little bit scared to put your horses out there, just because most equestrians have grown up thinking we need to bubble wrap our horses. We need to keep them protected. We need to keep them in these nice manicured pastures or in a dry lot. We need to keep them in stalls. And most of our horses are not prepared to live in the environment that they were actually designed to live in. And this has impacted their body awareness, so their proprioception. It's impacted their health. It's increasing injuries. It's impacting their mental health and their physical health. It's causing all kinds of problems that we are not even aware of. In our efforts to protect them, we're actually creating more problems. So additionally, also, I think with the movement science kind of thing, going back to that, I believe with more and more application of autonomy and giving the learner more choice and not trying to micromanage every movement and everything that they do. That example I gave you of shaping the school halt was a very specific scenario where I wanted a very specific thing. But a lot of times when my horses move, and when I'm doing things with them, I don't control every aspect of it. I don't make sure they have, you know, quote, this headset or that headset. I don't make sure that they always trot this way and not that way. They always do this and not that. I try not to micromanage all of their movement. Now, I'm still going back to operant conditioning is always occurring. I make sure that what I'm reinforcing is healthy and is leading us towards good things and is not causing long-term damage. And I'm keeping that in mind as I'm working with my horse in whatever capacity that is. So let's go back to reverse round pen kind of idea where I'm training my horse to do a trot and canter around the reverse round pen or even a walk. I am not going to sit there and micromanage exactly how fast I want that horse to walk, exactly what headset the horse should have, exactly how they're tracking up, like all that. I'm not going to specifically microshape every bit of that. However, what I am going to do is as they're going around the reverse round pen, you know, we've built up to, let's just say a lap. We've done one full lap of a 20-meter reverse round pen. They have the duration for that. I am going to see if I can help that horse towards a little bit more balance and a little bit more functional movement as far as making sure they're not completely inverted and carrying themselves upside down and dragging out from behind, like dragging their hind legs behind them and falling to the inside and all of these things. If my horse starts doing that, I know that they're not physically able to do the thing I'm asking them to do. So I'm going to go back to a stage where my horse can walk in a normal way, walk in a functional way, a healthy way. And I'm going to make sure when I am reinforcing and what I am building includes that. But within that range, within the scope of what is healthy functional movement, I'm going to largely leave it alone. And then I'm going to incorporate a lot of a variability into my training. I'm going to incorporate going over obstacles and letting the horse just, you know, play with that how they want. I'm going to explore going over different types of footing and let the horse explore going over that the way that they want to. They get reinforced for everything. And this goes back to also another application kind of thing. I reinforce like everything. There are very specific things that I am shaping and I am using my clicker for and all that. But if my horse chooses to do it a different way, I still reinforce. And then I'll go back and think about how am I going to set up the standing seat a little bit different to get the thing I was more looking for, if that's important. I'm going to look at how could I change my, you know, my mechanics, what I'm doing, maybe the shaping plan so that we can make progress towards the goal that I wasn't originally intending. But if my horse just changes midway somewhere, I'm not withholding. I'm not punishing. I'm just going to be like, well, that was kind of different, unusual. That was kind of, maybe we'll run with that. That's fine. But I'm just going to feed you like good effort, good job. Let's keep going. So when we start to implement these practices of reinforcement is never withheld, lots of variability in the training itself, and then paying attention to the rest of the 23-hour day, and then thinking about how we can help our horses explore more ranges of motion and more ways of doing things with when we are not there, or when we're not on their backs, or even on the ground doing an active training session, we're going to see huge improvements towards their health, their physical health, and their mental health. And I think we can effectively apply a lot of what we're learning in movement science. Okay, so another thing we got a question for or about was training a horse to drive. So driving a cart, carriage, something with positive reinforcement. And that was something that wasn't possible with positive reinforcement. That's not true because we actually have really great examples of this. I am not an expert, however. And this is not an area of specialty. It's actually not something that I've ever trained or explored myself personally because I just haven't had a lot of interest in it. But I do see really good examples of this. And I'm actually going to put in the show notes, I'm going to put the information of where you can look for more information about driving with positive reinforcement. Peggy Hogan and Monty Gwen are really great examples of this that we have right now. Great trainers that are teaching horses to drive. They actually have some good YouTube videos and stuff that's free and available if you're interested in that. But it is possible to teach horses to drive with positive reinforcement. We're just going to have to get creative with our reinforcement procedures and the shaping and all of that. But it is a really cool thing to watch. And I've watched a lot of the videos and kind of kept up with the different updates on the different horses that are being taught to drive with positive reinforcement. It is a really fun behavior and something that I would love to do with my own mini one of these days, or even a full size horse, but my mini in particular, I think you would have a lot of fun. We could just kind of set off and go driving somewhere. It'd be a lot of fun. All right. Last but not least, we got a comment that wasn't about horses, but I'm going to kind of relate it over to horse training. And the comment was recalling a hunting dog off of prey, that wasn't possible with positive reinforcement. So a couple of things I want to say is biologically, you know, genetics, they play a big role in our horses and dogs. There are going to be certain horses that are going to struggle more with certain things because of their genetics. And there's going to be certain horses that struggle with a different thing because of genetics or vice versa, meaning some horses won't struggle with it as much because of their genetics. So for example, we might have a horse that genetically is prone to a little bit slower, a little bit more consistent, steady kind of gaits. I'm thinking like a draft horse, right? This type of horse, we're going to struggle with getting speed from. Speed is not going to be the thing that they are genetically really prone to and going to have an easy time with. But does this mean that it's impossible to teach a draft horse to pick up a pace, their pace and trot or canter or even outright go for a gallop or something like that with positive reinforcement because they're not genetically prone to it? No. Does it mean it's going to be much harder? Probably. Now, there's always genetic anomalies, meaning breed anomalies, the horses that don't fit the normal breed standard. But that doesn't mean that it's an impossible task, that positive reinforcement can't do it now. So we need to keep that in mind. So going back to the example of the hunting dog off of prey, you're going to run into this same thing with hunting dogs. Dogs that have been bred for decades and decades and forever and ever to hunt prey. And then especially on top of that, we've got just a normal species kind of genetics and behavior. Dogs as a species are hunting type and scavenging type. So they are going to be more likely to go after prey than something like a horse. A horse is less likely to go hunt down prey, right? So we have that we're also dealing with as well. With positive reinforcement, though, when we're going against the grain a little bit, when we're going against what the dog or the horse is bred, designed to do, it does make our job harder, but not impossible. There's limitations, though, to how much I think it's ethical as far as when we're looking at this, when I'm making that statement as a whole. We need to be careful of it. You know, you got a dog for a reason. You got a hunting dog for a reason. Well, if you're going to ask them to do something different than they were bred to do, is it the right breed for you kind of thing? Same thing with a draft horse. You know, you got a draft horse and draft horses come with draft horse things. So maybe barrel racing isn't the sport for them. And how ethical is it to ask that horse then to do barrel racing when they are just not, they don't want to do it. They're not inclined to do it. It's just going to be an uphill battle. Why are we doing that? Maybe there's a Percheron out there that wants to run barrels. I'm not saying you can never do it. I'm just saying we need to be considering these factors of how much are we asking the animal to do something that is against their nature and how ethical is that? Like there's a line that we're going to cross at some point. That's just going to be, it's too much work and it's not good to ask the animal to do this anymore. Okay. But looking back at positive reinforcement, when we can build a really, really, really strong reinforcement history in a controlled exposure kind of way for the alternative behavior that we're looking for. So going to the hunting dog off of prey, what do you want from that? You want a recall or a really resilient heel. So staying in, you know, on a loose leash right by your side when they see prey. We can do that with positive reinforcement. You start off in a controlled environment. You build such a strong reinforcement history for staying in a heel position right beside you or doing the recall. And then you gradually increase the level of distraction up until the behavior can withstand exposure to a prey animal, even a prey animal running. I have herding breeds most of my life, and herding breeds want to herd. They want to chase things. They want to herd my horses. They want to herd other sheep, cattle, whatever it is, children even. I've been able to teach my herding dogs to only herd when given access to herding, when cued for that. So it's the same kind of idea here with chasing, with a hunting dog chasing prey, but it has to be done in a very structured way. You probably need professional support on it. And then, you know, we need to make sure that this dog is also getting an outlet for that behavior. Like we can't just say, oh, it's too bad you're a hunting dog. You're never allowed to hunt, or you're never allowed to go chase prey ever. It's terrible for you. I know I, you know, got a hunting dog, but you're just never allowed to do that. Same with my herding breeds. I always gave them an outlet for the behavior because we've bred them for this. It's only right that we give them an outlet for it. So when it comes to horses, kind of just start relating this question back to horses and horse training, we need to keep in mind what was our horse bred for? What are they suited for? What do their genetics say, you know, they can do and not do? We might look at it as something, actually a really great example with horses is eating grass. They are all designed to eat grass. That is what they do. They eat grass. They were designed to eat grass 18 hours a day. Can we train them not to eat grass with positive reinforcement in a controlled environment? Meaning we have them on a leash. I'm talking about dogs and horses. We have them on a lead. We're on a walk and we don't want them to eat grass while we're on a walk. Absolutely. You start off in a controlled environment where there's no grass. You teach them, you know, what is the equivalent of heeling for dogs. You teach them to lead right next to you. And then you gradually increase exposure to the thing we don't want them to do. And then you also make sure, this is the flip side of that, that you give them plenty of opportunity as you can physically. I know some horses have restrictions on how much grass they can have. But you give them access to at least forage the rest of the time. So they have an outlet for this very natural behavior so they can do the behavior. And then also when on lead and leading them around grass, you put the grazing on cue and then you put the not grazing on cue. So going back to the leading. So absolutely possible with positive reinforcement. And positive reinforcement can actually help create a very resilient, very strong behavior. I've seen this time and time again with all of the different species and animals I've worked with. You just have to be very intentional with the process, very intentional with the exposure, very intentional with your reinforcement history. And you may need to work with a professional if you're a novice trainer in this area, because again, this is a hard thing we're asking our animals to do. But yes, it is possible with positive reinforcement. Thanks so much for listening. If you have any questions, please do email me at info@thewillingequine.com. If you'd like more information on my courses, coaching, consulting, or even access to free resources, please do check out my website, thewillingequine.com. If you like this podcast or this episode, please do leave feedback on the platform that you listen to it on.